So the devotees invited me for one of these darshans. And I, at one of the darshans, I asked Prabhupada. It was Garga Muni had requested Prabhupada to sing the Chintamani prayers, which Prabhupada had done very beautifully. And he asked if anyone had any questions, so I raised my hand. And at the time, the draft board was, you know, a problem for every one of us at that age. So I was very concerned about whether or not I'd be drafted because America was at war in Vietnam. And so I asked Prabhupada to describe what the spiritual world was like. And he said to me, he looked back and he looked at me and he said, in the spiritual world, he said, the spiritual world is a place where there are no draft boards. Then he told a story. He said there was once a Christian minister who was preaching in England to coal miners. And he was describing the hell that awaited someone if they didn't accept the shelter of Jesus. And he said that hell is a terrible place, very, very dark, very dank and cold and wet. He said, no one would want to go there. So all the coal miners were thinking, well, if that's hell, you know, where are we? We're already in hell. It doesn't sound very fearful for us. This is where we live now. We're coal miners. So then the minister was trying to think of a way to convince them to begin worshiping Jesus. So then finally he said, in hell, there are no newspapers, and there's no tea. And then they all said, oh, then we must worship Jesus. So Prabhupada said, so in the spiritual world, there are no draft boards. He said, is that all right? I said, yes. Everybody said, jai.
Well, the first time I met Prabhupada, I was living in Hawaii. And I was a hippie, and I was living out on the beach, meditating, reading the Bhagavad Gita, trying to understand the meaning of life. And as I was sitting there one day meditating, a flyer flew by, and it said, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami speaking at Sunset Point on the Bhagavad Gita. So I thought, this is amazing. I can hear an actual Indian Swami talk to me about the Bhagavad Gita, the book I'd been studying for like 2 years. And since I was 14, I was 16 at the time. And so I went there to the lecture, and Prabhupada sat there, and he was talking, and he was sitting on just a slightly raised platform covered with a beautiful Indian rug, and there was only like maybe five or six devotees, and it was very, very small. This was in 1969, and he finished talking and asked for questions, and I said, Swamiji, I've been reading the Bhagavad Gita, and I handed him mine. And I said, is this one okay? Because a lot of the content of the lecture was how you must read a bona fide Bhagavad Gita from a bona fide spiritual master, etc. So I handed him my book, and I said, is this one okay? And he said, well, come back to the temple, and we'll talk. So I got in the back of this truck, and I remember sitting in the back of the truck. It was an open flatbed-type truck with a couple of other people, and devotees, and he was sitting in the front with a couple of other people, and I was watching his head the whole time because it was bobbing, and it was this beautiful bald head. And as we walked up the stairs to the temple, he said, come on in and we'll talk. So I went into the room, and he started talking to me about the Bhagavad Gita, and I started talking to him about LSD, which I was very much into at the time, and how I had seen Krishna on LSD. And he said, well, you don't need to take LSD because you can see Krishna because Krishna loves you and shows favor upon you. And then Govindadasi was there at the time, and she brought in a tray of sugar cane. Prabhupada said, would you share the sugar cane with me? And at the time I said, no, I don't eat sugar, because I was against any kind of sugar eating. And he said, this is very natural. It just grows on the side of this side of the road, you know. It's very natural. He was reading my mind. He knew exactly where I was coming from. And he showed me how to eat it. So we sat there and we ate sugarcane together, and I was chewing the pieces and he was chewing the pieces. We were putting our chewed pieces onto the same plate. I mean, in retrospect, it's amazing because it was this amazingly casual thing. And he played me a tape of a record that he had done, and showed me some other books and said, "I'd like you to stay here at the temple." And at the time I said, "Well, but but he told me I would have to stop taking LSD." So I said, "I can't do that." I said, "I'm getting so much spiritual insight from taking LSD." So he said, "Well, I hope that you will reconsider." And that was the first time I met him. It was pretty wonderful. I went back to the forest to meditate some more. And very shortly after that, I had the realization that the only way I could ever get spiritual enlightenment was to find him. So I called and around, because I didn't even know there was a Hare Krishna movement. It didn't, there was no connection. It was like this Swami. And I found out that he was in Los Angeles. So I went back to Los Angeles, and he was coming like in 2 weeks. And when I saw him there, I was dressed in a sari and everything. And he looked at me and he said, "I remember you from Hawaii." And he said he was very glad I had come. And said, "Come back to my apartment and we'll talk." So he had an apartment. This was when the temple in Los Angeles was not where it is now. It was on La Cienega, I think. And it was an old church. So I went back to his apartment and we talked, and he said to me, "Now you understand the difference between your Bhagavad Gita and my Bhagavad Gita." It was very cute.
The Seattle temple was, Narayan was up there building an altar, and when it was built, right around that time, I remember Prabhupada gave a lecture one day in the evening, an evening class, and he mentioned a godbrother of his, he'd received a letter that a godbrother of his had just passed away. Don't remember, somebody else will know the name. It was one of the Tirtha Swamis in the Gaudiya Math, but it wasn't Bhakti Vilas Tirtha, who lived, of course, much beyond that. It was another one whose name was something Tirtha Maharaj. And Prabhupada said that this particular godbrother was very kind upon him and had actually written him a letter while he was in living in Vrindavan as a vanaprastha, or Jhansi, or Vrindavan. I forget where he said he was, but he said he received a letter from this godbrother reminding him that Guru Maharaj, meaning Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, had wanted him to take sannyas and to preach, especially in the West. And this godbrother had written him a letter reminding him about that. And Prabhupada said, "I did not want to take sannyas because it is a very difficult position materially. It's not easy to do, and I didn't want to do it. But this godbrother wrote me this letter at this time," and he said, "and at the same time, right in the same days when I received this letter," he said, "three times in succession, on three successive nights," he said, "my Guru Maharaj appeared before me in dream. And each time in the dream, he was walking away from me, and as he was walking away, he turned around and beckoned for me to follow." And he went like this. Right. And he had that dream three times. I believe he said three nights in succession, but definitely three successive times in a very short span of time. Right at the same time that externally the godbrother had sent them this letter. And these things prompted him to take sannyas. What Prabhupada said specifically was, "In this way, my Guru Maharaj pulled me out from this material world." And when he said pulled, two tears just literally suddenly formed and leaped out of his eyes and went then, and it was just like they were squeezed out by a shudder of ecstasy, and it went running down his cheeks. They hadn't formed slowly and dripped down like most tears do. His voice got real thick as he said it, and tears came shooting out of his eyes. And everybody in the room was just speechless, right? Because we were all devotees or guests that were, but mostly it was just devotees there. It was an evening program and during a weekday. And I was very much impressed at the amount of intense feeling that he had toward his Guru Maharaj calling him to take sannyas.
One morning I shaved my head, and when Prabhupada, the first time he saw me, he came out of his apartment and he looked at me and he saw my head shaved and he said, "Ah, now you are an ideal brahmachari. He was very pleased that I had shaved my head, because he had noticed all along that I was keeping short hair, but I wouldn't shave up. And I had joined with Vishnujan, and he had shaved up before me, but I didn't shave up immediately. So when I finally shaved up, Prabhupada appreciated that. One time I asked Prabhupada on one of those morning walks, first walks I went with him, I asked him, how many pure devotees were there on the planet? And Srila Prabhupada turned to me or to one of the devotees and asked, how many devotees are there in ISKCON now? He said, that is how many pure devotees there are.
And in Amritsar, he was doing everything as far as personal habits, because in India, he said, everyone will watch all of your habits. Never touch your food with your left hand. So he's very, very, he taught us how to peel a banana without touching it with our left hand. He taught us how to drink water from a glass without touching it to our lips. So he was very particular about our habits, because he said, everybody will be watching and making sure that I've taught you well. And Jamuna and I, in Amritsar, decided, actually Prabhupada asked us to sing, lead kirtan once. And we were singing not just Hare Krishna, a lot of varieties of prayers. And somebody in the audience, when we were finished, criticized our Sanskrit pronunciation. And Prabhupada fired back at them, said, you do not have 1/10 of the devotion of these women. How dare you criticize their Sanskrit? He was very, very angry. He had such a passionate personality. And so he was very protective all the time when we were in Amritsar.
The first letter I wrote to Prabhupada was all about Sankirtan. I told him what the results of Sankirtan were. See, what happened was that Prabhupada told us, all the brahmacharis, to get jobs, because Jayananda was supporting the temple single-handedly, and Prabhupada said it wasn't fair. So he said, all the brahmacharis should go out and get jobs. So, you know, everybody did what they knew best. I remember Vishnujan, he decided that he was going to make flutes, bamboo flutes, and he used to stand on Haight Street, and he made all the flutes so that they played Hare Krishna. And he would just stand out on Haight Street playing Hare Krishna all day. And he said, he was a Brahmin. And he told me that I was a Sudra because I went to work for Kodak. See, Gurudas was working at Kodak. So Gurudas got me a job at Kodak, and it was a very, you know, one of these high-tech jobs. I would get the film canister and break it in half. That was my job. break the film canister. And then when they saw that I was really capable of doing that, they moved me up to a higher position where I would run the film through a heating elements, and it would be developed this way. And then I would get to bring it to Gurudas, who was in the darkroom developing. He got a bigger salary than I did. So you can imagine what this was like. But still, it was yoga, and I felt it was yoga. I'd give the whole check to the temple. And every day I just, you know, looked forward to the lunch break. I'd immediately go out and have my little lunch. And I'd go out and with Gurudas and take lunch, and we'd have some kartals and do some kirtan. And it was the only thing that saved me, was that lunch break. But after a month or two of this, it was unbearable. Gargamuni went to Montreal and talked to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said that if they don't want to do this, then let them go out on the street and do chant on the streets. So we had an istagosti, and we discussed this, and I volunteered that I would organize it because I wanted to get out of that job. So I was very eager to, or I was ready to do anything to get out of that job.
While we were walking back one time, I remember I asked Srila Prabhupada, and we were walking side by side, I said, Srila Prabhupada, could I ask you this? This is not a judgmental question, because whatever you eat, I'll eat with you and feel like it's what I should be eating, and it's maha prasadam for me. But I don't think that the food that we're getting fed here is really being offered to Krishna. They have a Krishna deity in there, but you can't tell him from the other deities, and they don't make any discrimination. And how should we view eating like this? And Prabhupada looked at me and he said, now I'm putting this out now because I feel like some of these things, at least they should be on record, even though, well, I'll tell you what happened. He said, actually, he said, everything is prasadam. And so a Vaishnav, if he takes anything, he simply takes it as the mercy of the Lord. Right? But we prefer to eat. what is offered to Radha and Krishna. But otherwise, we understand everything to be the mercy of Krishna. He said, but do not preach like this, he said. And I said, why is that? And he said, because the new devotees, they will take food simply as sense enjoyment unless they offer it first. And so we did not want to confuse them. And that, as I thought about it, I was smiling on the way back because I always thought that's the difference between how an Uttama Adhikari sees things and when he comes down to the level of a Madhyama Adhikari to preach. It was the first time I saw a clear-cut example of that, which I saw many times later on, as I saw how Prabhupada had his priorities and like that. But that was the first time.
So we did about $12 the first day. And I thought this. I went back to the temple. Gargamuni had a little shop. And I said, Gargamuni, we did $12. He said, wow. He said, I'm going to give up my shop. This is big. This has huge potential. He was ready to give up his shop. So the next day I decided to take back to Godhead's with us. And when the people give a donation, I give them a back to Godhead. And the collections, by the end of 5 days, it had gone up to $40. And I wrote Prabhupada day by day how it increased. And Prabhupada wrote me this letter and he said, don't worry so much about money. He said, if Krishna wants, he can give you the whole USA. The question is, what will you do with it? Do you know what to do with it? So it was a sobering letter.
We went to the Golden Temple, which is the most holy temple for the Sikhs. And they showed us around one of the, it's not pujaris for them, but one of the temple people there showed us around the temple. And Prabhupada was very impressed. He really liked it. They had a huge chapati maker, like an upside-down wok, that there was about 10 men around, big, long spatulas, flipping chapatis, and they were feeding people, poor people, and he was very impressed by that. And we went in, and we went to the inner sanctum of the Golden Temple, and we walked all around. And at the end, when we walked out, there was a book that they asked Prabhupada to sign. And they said, would you sign our book, Swamiji? And he said yes, and he signed his book. And under the book, in the book, there was a place that said, what are your impressions of the temple? And Prabhupada said, very spiritual. And he made sure that we all heard what he was saying, because he wrote it and told us at the same time. And then under religion, it was very cute, because he wrote, Krishnite. And it was very funny. Not Hindu, Krishnite. And so that was a wonderful experience in Amritsar.
Prabhupada was very pleased with this Harinam party. He decided when he left San Francisco to open a temple in Seattle. Gargamuni and Upendra had gone there. And Prabhupada decided that the Sankirtan party should go with him. And at that point, Jayananda went to Prabhupada and asked Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, well, again, it was Swamiji at the time, he said, Swamiji, you know, I'd like to travel with the Sankirtan party. And Prabhupada said, but you are the president. And he said, I think this is more important. And then Prabhupada said, well, what will you do? And he said, I'll be the driver. And Prabhupada thought for a second, he said, very good, you can go. And he was willing to, he thought so much about Sankirtan that he was willing to let the top devotee, the person who was maintaining the whole temple, who was the temple president, he was prepared to let him go to become the driver of the Sankirtan party. So Jayananda joined our party that way.
I remember, I again, it was plenty of time. He was talking. He was letting us ask questions. And so I asked him a question at one point. I said, Prabhupada, it says that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says at one point that the 14 different grades of planetary systems are arranged along the stem of the lotus flower. And I said, I had always envisioned that they would be from Brahma Loka, and there's a lotus flower that stem that comes down to the navel of the, which one is that? That's the Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, the second Vishnu, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. He's supposed to be in each universe. It's supposed to be filled halfway with water. And then from his navel, it says that a lotus stem comes. And on top of the lotus is Brahmaloka. And that the rest of the planetary systems are arranged, it says, along the stem of the lotus flower. I said, I had always envisioned them like we put them in pictures. We put them out in space kind of around Brahmaloka. But here it says that they're along the stem of the lotus flower. I said, how can that be? Because they appear to be in all directions. And Prabhupada looked at me. And he went like this. He smiled. He went, well, it may be a very big lotus flower. Then he shook his head a little bit and he said, but we cannot understand these things with our puppy brains. And he smiled. And I just put my head down and smiled because it hit me immediately that I'm trying to conceive of all these things, but I have a very small scope, right? And then when he said that, it was a nice point of revelation.
When the operation was going on, they gave this anesthetic, you know, they put the anesthetizer. And I remember I was meditating on Radharas Bihari and the Aarti. I was just meditating on it, and they said, count down from 10 down. And I think I got down to about 7, and that was it. And then I had a dream, a very good dream, in which Srila Prabhupada had been called by the previous acharyas to make a report of his preaching mission on this planet. And the previous acharyas were all there. And they asked Prabhupada that, what is your report? And Prabhupada said that he had studied the people of this planet and he had found that they had no capacity for taking any type of austerity, nor were they very capable of studying, and they were not very pious. He said the only thing that so far they seem to be able to do is that somehow they take shelter at my feet. This was the dream I had. And then they wheeled me out after the operation, and when I came in to the room which had been assigned to me, Prabhupada was sitting there. Actually, he had come to the hospital. And he said, I came here as fast as I could. I wanted to stop the operation. He said, because I think you should have had this operation in America. But anyway, now it is there. And it turned out he had come all the way in from Juhu in a jeep, right in the middle of the rush hour to try to stop this operation. So I told Prabhupada about the dream, and Prabhupada listened very intently, and he said, actually, this is so. He said, this is so.
I remember one time in New Delhi, somebody said, Maya, he was talking about Maya, and he said, Maya, everything, this whole world is just an illusion. And Prabhupada jumped down his throat and said, how dare you call it an illusion? He said, it is beautiful. He said, the mountains are beautiful, the oceans are beautiful, the rivers, the sky, the trees, everything. This is a beautiful world. He said, but what it is it's temporary. And it's just a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So if you see the beauty of this world, you'll see how beautiful the spiritual world is. You know, a million times more beautiful. But he said, it's like if you were to paint a painting and bring it to me and say, Srila Prabhupada, look at this painting I have done for you. And I would look at it and say, it's an illusion. He said, it would hurt your feelings. So I find it very offensive that you call this world an illusion.
So when Prabhupada came to San Francisco, he had wanted me to come back to India to take up my service again because he couldn't find anyone to replace me as a GBC. And so when Prabhupada was there, as soon as we got in the car, we picked him up. Prabhupada started talking about Hare Krishna land and India. And I was just, I could feel the pressure was coming down. So then we went into Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada had, you know, it was just myself and Prabhupada in the room. And he said, so, you know, what are you going to do? Are you prepared to come back to India? And I said, well, Prabhupada, I'm preaching now. And Prabhupada was a little upset. He said, what is that preaching? He said, preaching means there must be results. I said, oh, there's results. He said, what are those results? Let me see really what are the results. So I had all of our new men shave up, and they all were completely fresh shaved, the 10 new bhaktas, and I had them each come up with a rose, and one by one, they came up and they put a rose on Prabhupada's desk, and they offered their obeisances, dandavats, and then they sat down, and Prabhupada started to beam, and he said, this is preaching. He was so happy to see this. He said, so you stay here. He approved of it.
I remember one day we went from Mr. Jariwala's house to an engagement at an industrial facility outside of Surat, where the company had invited us to come for their employees, and we did an engagement. It was a nice place. That I remember there were bougainvillea bushes growing around the place and palms, and there was grass behind the industrial facility, which wasn't a heavy factory. I don't know what they made there, but anyway. Prabhupada gave it was a kirtan and lecture and kirtan program. And on the way back, our host that day wanted to show us a new Durga temple that had just been constructed by the side of a river there. And I forget the name of that particular river, but it flows through, that's Gujarat province. Surat's in Gujarat. We've gone from Maharashtra, where Bombay is, up into Gujarat. And by this nice stream, there was a really nice new Durga temple built, and it had a new deity in it. And it was one of those temples where they were taking care of the deity and like that. And I remember specifically Prabhupada telling us as we went in to do just like he did. And he said, when I bow down, I'm going to bow down with my right-hand side toward Mother Durga, right, toward the Durga deity. Now, normally when we bow with our left side, because usually, it's not this way in the LA temple, but usually the Vyasa-san is to the right, or the guru is said to be we're supposed to be bowing to our guru, and it puts our left side toward the deity. So when you bow to a demigod, you should bow and offer respects, but you do it by offering to your guru. The deity is on your right and Krishna is on your left. And that's how you'd be thinking as you offer obeisances to your spiritual master before the demigod. They're also serving Krishna. They will accept this respect, right?
We came through. The next program the Prabhupada was going to was in Madras. And we stopped. The train stopped from Ahmedabad to Madras, stopped in Bombay. But because my wife was now at the temple and I was a sannyasi, I wouldn't go. So I sent my party to see Prabhupada and give the report. And I just sat in the train station waiting for them to come. It was a 6-hour or something wait over. And then suddenly Yadubar came and he said, Prabhupada sent me here to bring you back. He said, you can come to the temple. I said, but you know, my wife is there, former wife is there, I can't go, I'm a sannyasi. I said, no, Prabhupada said, it's okay. So as soon as I came into the room and I offered my obeisance, Prabhupada said, the temple is a neutral ground. He said, it is neutral. You can be here at the same time. There's no harm. And then he asked everyone to leave the room, which was quite unusual, I thought. Because Prabhupada didn't generally do that. He asked everyone to leave the room and he beckoned me over to the table and he said, now tell me, give me your report. So I gave them a report, and he was so happy about this preaching report, because I had just been in sannyasi this was his first preaching assignment he'd given me. And after it, he became so pleased, he stood up, and I had offered my obeisances, and he stood up, so I stood up, and he walked around the table, and he just took me in his arms, and he held me very tightly, he embraced me on one side, and then he embraced me on the other side, and he said, now take this sannyas mantra in your heart, and go everywhere and preach. He said, now, he said, Kirtananda is a sannyasi, Brahmananda is a sannyasi, and you're a sannyasi. Now I can retire peacefully and translate. Go and preach. And I was just, my whole body was so transformed, you know, I felt by Prabhupada's touch, because it was very rare that Prabhupada would use his body so much like that too. And it was a real, you know, I really felt surcharged by that, empowered by that. And, then I went back to the train and we went to Madras.
I remember another time Prabhupada said, this was in Bombay, there was a Indian gentleman who came in. And we used to sit with Prabhupada a lot. The schedule would be that we would have after morning service. And when we were first in India, the Mangala Artik was in his room. So the little deities that we traveled with were just set up in his room, and we would go in his room, and he would sometimes do the service. And after Mangala Artik, he would talk to us on the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. And then after that, he would have darshan, which is people coming to visit him. And we did this everywhere, like in Amritsar, all throughout India, wherever we went, this would be the schedule. And in Bombay, this man came into him and he prostrated himself in front of him and he said, Prabhupada, Swamiji, he said, you will save me. You can enlighten me. And Prabhupada looked him squarely in the eye and said, I cannot enlighten you. I can teach you how you can enlighten yourself, but you have to do the work yourself. So he was not one to say that, you know, just by his association you would be enlightened. You had to work at it would take effort.
It was about July, I believe, July of 70, and I was in Paris. Prabhupada had sent me to Europe to organize our temples in London and Paris and Hamburg. At that time, there was no GBC, but he put me in charge to coordinate the temples there. So I was in Paris, and I suddenly got a telegram. Your letter, 26th July. Come Los Angeles immediately. I was on a plane that same day. And I just detached myself, and I got on a plane and went to Los Angeles. So that was quite a time, because it was the time of, our four sannyasis in our society had... There was some difficulty in their understanding of how the movement was to be run. So Prabhupada was very, very disturbed, because he had detected that there had been some poison which had come, in terms of belittling his position, which had come from some of his godbrothers in India. So I came in the evening, and then the next morning Prabhupada called me, having heard I'd come, and he called me, and he was very grave. And he looked very shriveled almost. And he looked up to me, and he just had a little spotlight on his table, desk lamp. He looked up and he said, "Have they told you?" And I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." He said, "Can you take me out of here?" I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." He said, "Where will you take me?" So I thought, and I said, "Well, I could take you to Florida." I said, "It's not far enough." I said, "I could take you to Europe." He said, "The poison has spread there as well." And I said, "Then where do you want to go?" I said, "I want to go to India." I think that Prabhupada had the ability to accomplish many, many purposes by each one of his actions. Later on, Prabhupada told me in 1977, he said, Prabhupada was laying in his bed in Krishna Balaram Temple, and we were reminiscing. He said, "Remember when you took me from Los Angeles?" I said, "Yes." He said, "At that time," he said, "I went before Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish, and I said, 'My dear Lord, you have called me all the way here, and you have given me this wonderful temple. Now why are you sending me away?'" Prabhupada said, "I couldn't understand why the Lord was sending me out." And he said, "Now I understand. Because he wanted to give me this temple, Krishna Balaram Temple." He said, "This is 100 times what every other temple in the world is." He said, "But I didn't understand at that time."
One evening, he said he wanted to have a feast for the Gita Press people. He said, "They have been sheltering us and feeding us, so we will cook for them." And I got to cook it. Our cooks made sabji and puris, and I made a chutney and halva, which I made with milk. Right? Later on, Prabhupada said it's Parsi halva, it's first class, but that was later. One way or the other way, I cooked in the afternoon, then everyone came to the program. I remember in the afternoon, Prabhupada asked what I was going to make as a chutney, and I said, "Apple." And he went, "I do not think apple chutney is very nice. Make tomato or something like that." I said, "Well, Prabhupada, they already purchased the fruit, so we already have the apples." He said, "All right," he said, "but I do not, apple chutney." So I thought, "Well, I'll do the best I can." It was already, because it was like 20 rupees for the apples or something like that. They were not common, right? Anyway, putting that aside now, the program went on. At this program, Prabhupada, for example, a couple days earlier and throughout that week, Prabhupada had been teaching us. He had a copy of Bhaktivinoda's songbook that he'd just been given. And he was teaching us Jai Radha Madhava in the morning by having us repeat it after him. Right? He took a special liking to that particular song. And that's when he began to sing it before his morning class. That's when it started. And he was teaching it to us by repeating one line at a time and having us repeat it after him. Another time at the same time, deities were there. It was either Radha Damodar or another almost identical set to Radha Damodar that we had acquired there. They were the medium, about this high, the multi-metal kind, really beautiful deities that we were worshiping there. And we were taking care of the deity worship. And the floor was wooden, and Prabhupada didn't think it was properly clean, and he'd mentioned it, and then when he saw it, he didn't think it was clean enough again. I remember Kaushalya had volunteered to clean the floor in the temple room. Prabhupada said, well, okay, this is how you do it. You're not doing it properly. Do it like this. And Prabhupada pulled his dhoti up and got down on his hands and knees. And he had a pot of water, right, and another pot. He said, get two pots, right, one for dirty water, one for clean water. And he took a rag, and he put it in one pot of water. He got down, he scrubbed the floor, right, then he went to the other pot, and he wringed it, and then he wringed it out into that, and then he put, and rinsed it, and then he put it in fresh water, and put it back down, wring it out, and then he went back down and mopped up what he'd done. He said, in this way, you will keep one that is clean and one that gets dirtier. And always rinse the rag and then soak up the dirt. That way you'll pick up the dirt rather than just moving it around. But he spent like 2 or 3 minutes down on his hands and knees scrubbing the floor in front of the deities. I remember that was a nice thing to see him do. He didn't hesitate to do it at all. He got right down to show Kaushalya exactly how he wanted it done.
Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's, I think it was appearance day. So I told Prabhupada, that Srila Prabhupada, you know, can we celebrate this in the evening? Because then we'll have a lot of guests. Prabhupada said, no. It must be celebrated at noon. So it was on a Friday. I said, Friday evening, we can fill up the temple. He said, no, it must be at noon. So we celebrated in the room, in Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada had a little room. This is La Cienega Boulevard Temple, L.A. Prabhupada had a side room next to the big temple room. So Prabhupada did all of the prayers and spoke about his Guru Maharaj. Then he said to me, how is the feast going? So I said, I'll take a look. It was about 10:30. So I went in. Nothing was done. There was no preparation. So I went back to, and I said, you know, what is going on here? I started screaming at them. They said, well, you told us it was going to be Friday night. And I said, Prabhupada wanted it at noon, you know, and maybe it was my mistake. I might not have conveyed the message in any case. So I went back to Prabhupada and he said, so, how is it going? And I said, there's nothing done. You know, Prabhupada just looked at me. Didn't say a word. Got up, walked through, out of his room, through the temple, through the prasadam hall, and into the kitchen. He immediately told the devotees, get this done, cut this vegetable. He cooked a feast in 1 hour for at least 70 devotees, personally cooked the whole feast, at least 12 preparations, within 1 hour's time. And he always told me, I always remember this, Prabhupada always said, deity worship is 1 hour's business, cooking is 1 hour's business. Cooked the whole feast in 1 hour. And I remember one of the best things I remember about it was the way Prabhupada made the puris that day. Because every puri puffed up. He put in the puri in the hot ghee, you know, and he would just touch it. And it was like he would touch them. I remember they would blow a little and he would touch them, even sometimes with his finger. They were just perfect puris. Then the feast was offered and it was brought out of Prabhupada's room after. It was given to Prabhupada, the whole maha plate. Within about 3 minutes afterwards, it came out practically untouched. And we were all eating this big feast, and we saw Prabhupada didn't eat it. Prabhupada was very upset. But he still cooked the whole feast for his Guru Maharaj. He was determined that it must be, and he told him it must be offered by 12. But he was very disturbed.
In Surat, the whole town laid out the red carpet for Prabhupada. People would string saris across the buildings, from building to building, to shade the pathway when we would do Sankirtan. Everyone would hang out the windows and throw flowers and rice. And people would come up to us by the hundreds, giving us garlands, and they would pile up so you'd have to start taking them off. because there would be so many. And Prabhupada, for hours, tirelessly, would see hundreds of people, and he'd pass out these little candies to them. Surat was really, really magical. Prabhupada used to speak tirelessly. We would go to various programs. Prabhupada, by that time, had known that, because we talked a lot, he knew that I had memorized the East Upanishad and was able to sing it because I'd sung it for him before. So we went to this village outside of Surat once, and he asked me to sing the East Upanishad. So I sang, I stood up and I sang. I was very nervous. I mean, I was only like, you know, at the time I was only 18 by that time. So I'm singing this, all the verses. I've memorized all of them and I'm singing them. And Prabhupada was always treating us like his children. So when I finished, he was beaming like a proud father. And he called me over and put my head in his lap. And he patted my back and rubbed my head. And he said he was so proud. And, I mean, it was like one of those magical moments where I'll never forget it, because he was very warm, very affectionate.
The first meeting we had with the whole group of members of Dainapan, the top chairman down, they all came and very formally they presented their cards to Prabhupada. I think this story is told in the Leelamrita. They all presented their cards and then they left, and Prabhupada was left with one, you know, the number seven man to just show us off at the end. It was like a whole ceremony. It was like a tea ceremony, but we drank water. They drank tea. They were on one side of the big, big oak desk and we were on the other. So Prabhupada had a word with the man before we went to the limousine, and he asked the man, "What is, you know, your goal?" And of course, Prabhupada had been given these calling cards by each of them. "My name is so and so. My name is so and so." So that man took all the cards and put them in a row, up from down, and he was number seven. When Prabhupada asked him what his goal in life was, he took the card number seven, and he went like this. And Prabhupada shook his head and laughed, and then he really, you know, started to preach to this man about the nature of life and how temporary it was, and that was not the purpose of life. So Prabhupada was a real transcendental negotiator. He had me be the heavy man, and Dainapan would give a price, and I would say it's impossible, and I'd give this ridiculously low price, and they would just practically start crying. It was so ridiculous, the price. And that we would get into a big argument, and Prabhupada would just sit there in a neutral position, and finally he would act as if he was the arbitrator. And he'd say, "This is not good, there should not be quarreling like this." He said, "I will settle it." He said, "You know, neither side should argue like this. We must consider both the needs of each side." And he would pick the price that he wanted, you know, which was still extremely low, but by that time they would just think that, you know, the Prabhupada was their savior. And this way we went through all of the prices of each book, and Prabhupada got very low contract prices. And he was very proud that he had been able to get $60,000 worth of business with a $5,000 down payment. He said, they have so much trust and faith in my writing.
So then that night, all the people from the Gita Press showed up for this program. And it was supposed to be a lecture on Vedanta Sutra, like a very philosophical topic, right? The one that starts out, Janmad Yasya Yato Nyayad, or Yataha. And then it becomes the first line in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's very philosophical. So Prabhupada was speaking about Vedanta Sutra, but very quickly he brought it around to the conclusion that the ultimate knowledge of Vedanta was knowledge of Radha and Krishna, right? And then he quoted the line, the one about Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. And when he was talking about Kunja Bihari, right, which means that they're enjoying in the pleasure groves of Vrindavan, as he talked about Kunja Bihari, he had been speaking for maybe 15 minutes. His eyes closed. And he was sitting up very straight. And he just stopped talking and was sitting up very straight with a little tremble was going in his body. And he just sat there for I don't know how many minutes. He just sat quietly for several minutes. And both the Gita Press people who are actually nice Indian devotees and ourselves were just spellbound watching him because we knew that he drifted off into a trance right on the Vyasasan. Sometimes in those days when we were traveling, Prabhupada would be tired and he would literally doze off while sitting in his seat or waiting in the, on the Vyasasan or something like that. But this time he was sitting up very straight and there was a little tremor I could see in his body. And after several minutes while we just sat, you could hear a pin drop in the room. Nobody said anything. Nobody moved. Everybody just was watching him. After a few minutes, he opened his eyes and he said, "So this song is very nice. You should all learn to sing this song." And he got up off the Vyasasana and went into his room, and that was the end of the lecture.
In London, of course, that was another interesting negotiation. Prabhupada told us, I got to London in September of 1969, and by that time Prabhupada was getting ready to get the place in Bari Place, Seven Bari Place. And what is a temple without deities? So Prabhupada gave us the instruction that we need to, you have to install Radha Krishna deities. But he didn't order the deities, and we didn't have any deities. He just said, such and such, December so-and-so was the date of the opening, and you have to have Radha Krishna deities. So we, you know, started to go. It was like trying to find a needle in a haystack. How are you supposed to find Radha and Krishna in London? We just started to ask anyone and everyone. It was like a, you know, a national alarm. Anyone knowing the whereabouts of Radha and Krishna, please phone such and such number. And that was the number of Mukunda's wife, Janaki. So, well, it went, you know, week after week went by, and Prabhupada would call us and say, "Where are the deities?" And we said, "You know, we don't know where Radha and Krishna are." Prabhupada said, "You have to have deities." So finally, miraculously, when we were practically giving up, we get this phone call. Janaki gets a phone call. Someone says, "We have Radha Krishna deities." So immediately she informed Mukunda, and Mukunda and I went down to this man's house. And the man took us into his study, and he said, "I have some Radha Krishna marble deities. Would you like to look at them?" So, you know, would we like to look at them? You know, we were ready to jump out of our skins, practically. Sure, we wanted to look at them. And he took off the cloth, and, you know, we just offered our obeisances, because that was Radhalanda Nishvara. So we said, "They're beautiful. They're so beautiful." I mean, they were beautiful. And he said, "Well, I'm considering that I may be willing to give them to your temple." So we said, "Well, we have to, you know, can we bring our spiritual master to see them?" And he said, "Yes, you can do so." So we raced out, and we went to a phone booth. I remember we called immediately to Prabhupada's apartment. Prabhupada was living near Regent's Park, very nice apartment. And we called up, and he was resting, so we decided just to go over there. We went in, and we told him, "Prabhupada, we found Radha and Krishna." So Prabhupada immediately said, "Take me, I want to see them." So we had a van. We used to have a van. And it was Prabhupada and Mukunda, Shamsundar, and myself, maybe Gurudas, came in the van and we went in. And by that time was the early evening. Prabhupada came in and he started to talk with this Indian gentleman, very friendly way. The man said that these deities were ordered already for society, but somehow or other things had not worked out. There was some difficulty and they could not use the deity. So Prabhupada would just ignore the point, and he just kept asking the man, "Where are you from? How are you? How's your wife?" He made the man bring his wife in, bring the children in. Prabhupada, you know, gave his blessings to everyone. He was just talking, talking. And finally the man, you know, said, "Swamiji, don't you want to see the deities?" And Prabhupada said, "Oh, yeah, yes, we can see the deities." It was just so nonchalant, as if he was not even interested. So, you know, he said, "Please, I want to show them to you." So he took the man took Prabhupada over, and he showed him the deities. And Prabhupada looked and said, "Hmm." And he just turned around and walked and sat back in his sofa. So the man said, "Wow, so Swamiji, I mean, what do you think? Can you use the deity?" Prabhupada said, "Man, they looked like they may be used." He said, well, you know, I'm thinking I can give them to you. Rabbi said, yes, we could accept them. And he said, he asked me, go and see how heavy the deity is. So I went over, and Shem Sunder went over, and I tilted Radharani, and I said, not very heavy. She was heavy, but I said, not very heavy. Shem Sunder had Krishna. Prabhupada said, all right, we'll take them now. He said, pick them up, and we just... And then the man said, wait, Swamiji, wait a moment. I think maybe he had an idea of recovering some of the cost. I don't know what he had an idea. He said, wait. And he said, no, there's no problem. It's not heavy. These are American boys. They're very strong. And we carried the deities out, and the man was just protesting, Swamiji, one minute. And we walked right out to the van and brought Radha Krishna, put them in, and Prabhupada sat down in the seat next to the driver's seat. And he said, you know, I'll take care of the deities. We'll be in touch with you. And the man just, you know, the whole family was out there, and they were just like this. And Prabhupada said, okay, let's drive. So we drove off, and when we got around the corner, Prabhupada said, stop the car. And then we stopped the van, and Prabhupada said, take the cloth off the deities. We took the deities, and then Prabhupada just started to offer prayers. There were tears in his eyes, and he started to sing the prayers from Brahma Samhita. And he said, Krishna has now appeared in London.
And Prabhupada, I talked the pujari of Govindaji's temple, I talked him into giving Prabhupada a house on the temple grounds. So we cleaned this house, and Prabhupada came in, and he was very, very pleased. And one day, while this pandal was going on, I went into Prabhupada. This is a sweet story, because I said, Prabhupada, you know, it's kite flying season. There's kites in the sky. I mean, the sky is just covered with kites. And he said, are you going to go fly kites today? I said, no, I wasn't thinking of it. And he goes, I used to fly kites when I was young with my sister. And he said, and her kite would always fly higher than mine. And he said, it would make me so angry because my sister's kite was always going to fly higher than mine. So he said, one day I decided I would cheat. And I got up on the roof and I started flying my kite from there. So my kite was flying higher than my sister's, Pishima. And then he says, but then she started chanting, Govinda, Govinda, help me. And her kite flew higher than mine. He said, so even in our childhood, we were always remembering Krishna. It was very sweet. Then he said, so go. You go fly kites today.
Pishima was adored and even worshipped, especially by the lady devotees. One time we were going in procession from Calcutta to Mayapur, and Pishima was in one of the rear cars. And then she got out, and all the women rushed there, and they were doing... And Prabhupada said, what are they doing? I said, well, Srila Prabhupada, they have respect for her, you know, as they do, in a way, for you. He said, why? What is that? What has she ever done? She's just an old lady. What has she ever done?
And when he first arrived, I showed him the flyers that I had made up for the pandal ceremony. And it said, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami is going to be at so-and-so Mandir Govinda, because the pandal itself was behind Govindaji's temple, and in the back of the temple in an open lot area. And it said, Bhaktivedanta Swami and his foreign disciples. Prabhupada looked at the foreign disciples. He said, why did you say foreign disciples? I said, I thought it would be attracting people. And he goes, no, it should say American and European disciples. That is the attraction. And then he made one of the men redo the whole thing. And then he said, what can I expect? You're just an unintelligent woman. I walked out. I was crying. I was so upset because I'd worked so hard to put this thing together. Then I found out. The Prabhupada said after I left, he said, I am very pleased with her, but a guru's business is to discipline. If I don't discipline, how will you ever learn? He said, disciple means discipline, so therefore I discipline. He was actually not mad at me. It was very nice.
I had a habit, whenever Prabhupada would tell me something, I would always say just unconsciously, I know. And one day Prabhupada said, you know, you think you know everything. And I really, you know. like that. You think you know everything. Another time, Prabhupada had this system when he did his construction projects in India. Two signers on every check. Prabhupada was one signer and I was the other. There was only one problem when Prabhupada would travel out of the country. So one day I suggested to Prabhupada, why don't you sign some blank checks? Prabhupada did not like that idea at all. He said, this is my account. Is it all right that I decide how the money will be used? Is that all right with you? You know, I was suggesting to him that we could do different things.
Dropping back a little bit to one of the cities we were in, and I believe it was in Indore. There was an invitation one night from the Indore Lions Club, I believe it was. They had clubs like they have in the West, the Lions Club. These were local politico businessmen, and they invited us to come for a program. Prabhupada didn't want to go do it, so he called me in. He said, "I'm not going to go to this one." He said, "I do not like these men." He said, "They are snakes." You go and give the lecture. I went, "Oh my gosh!" You know, I said, "Well, what should I tell them?" Right. He said, just tell them we are spreading their Hindu religion all over the world, so they're obliged to give us a donation. But before you talk, have a big kirtan, right? Have a good kirtan. You lead it, right? And then you speak, right? He said, if you have a big kirtan first, he said, the chanting, he said, it is our mantra for charming snakes. Then they'll be able to listen for a few minutes without arguing and try to get them to agree to give a donation and go. So he said, it is our mantra for charming snakes.
Prabhupada had a system of keys, you know, for keeping his... Prabhupada would keep a key under his keychain, under his wristwatch. This was the key to wherever his belongings were kept, his valuables were kept. So he'd never part with this key. But because he was becoming very ill, you know, I was always, you know, desiring that Prabhupada would take me into his confidence. So one day he really gave me an ultimate confidence in letting me hold the key. This was a key to his desk drawer. So I had the key, and then, you know, naturally, what would I do but lose the key? So I came before Prabhupada. Prabhupada asked for something. I didn't tell him right away. I mean, I scoured Hare Krishna land. I went everywhere looking for that key, and I could not find it. I had people looking all over that place. And finally, Prabhupada called for something from the desk, and I went to Prabhupada, and I said, Srila Prabhupada, I have to tell you something. Prabhupada was laying down because he was ill. He said, yes. I said, Prabhupada, I lost the key. Prabhupada said, call the GBC. I said, which one, Prabhupada? He said, call the whole GBC here to decide what should be done. I went, oh, God. He said, call the whole GBC. So I just... there was nothing I could do. I just walked out. I decided, okay, I'm going to call the GBC here. He wanted to call the whole GBC body to Bombay to decide what was going to be done with me, I guess. I don't know what the... So then I got this, you know, I was just beside myself, and suddenly I thought, let me try another key. And, you know, sure enough, it was an Indian lock. I just got another key, and somehow or other, I opened it up. And I ran to Prabhupada. I said, Prabhupada, I opened it. He said, how did you open it? I said, I found another key. And he thought, and he said, that means the lock was not very good. He said, then it doesn't matter if you lost that key because it's not a good lock. So then he said, you know, now put the key on your Brahmin thread. He made me put the key on my thread, put the thread through it and put the key. And he said, don't ever lose this. But he had a very interesting way of keeping the key. This key was a key that opened up a safe. The safe had a key that opened up his Almira. And in the Almira, under a special place, was the key that opened up the safe in the Almira. Four keys. He had a whole key system. One key led to another key that led to another key that finally led to the key that opened up the safe. Prabhupada had a lot of systems. Another thing he had me do is that every key had to be labeled, and there had to be a log of all the keys, an index of all the keys. And not only was there an index of every key, there was an index of every item in every Almira. He wanted everything systematized. This was an Indian system. Just like you go to India, every seat, every desk, you know, is gazetted, is numbered. That's the Indian government. Prabhupada did certain things, like Prabhupada told me, you have to keep all documents for 7 years. He had many things he learned from the Indian government. He always used to quote about the Indian railways, you know, that said, keep the wheels moving. He said that was a good motto for ISKCON, keep the wheels moving.
We were in New Delhi during the Bangladesh War. And so every night, Prabhupada would want to work and talk to us and have meetings and have darshan with different people. But we had to keep the lights out because they had blackouts that were mandatory. And you had to turn all the lights out. So Prabhupada was unhappy about that. And I decided that I should black out the windows. So I got black cloth and put it in the windows. And that night, I flipped on the lights as a surprise for him, to show him that we could have the lights on. And he said, oh, Kushalya, you have put blackout in the windows. He said, that is first-class intelligence. And then he said, first-class intelligence is you see a need and you do it. No one tells you. He said, second-class intelligence is I say to you, do this and that, and you do it excellently. That's second-class intelligence. He said, third-class intelligence is, I say, go do this or that, and you run out the door, and you come back and you say, what was I supposed to do?
Prabhupada was in the early days. I was the Mott commander in Los Angeles, La Cienega Temple. Prabhupada called me one day. And he was talking to me, and he asked me to get the Bhagavatam. He had the Bhagavatam, his original Bhagavatam. And he said the cover, you know, was a spiritual sky. And he said, you see this spiritual sky? It's very big. He said, you cannot fathom how big this is. He said, in this, the spiritual sky, three quarters of the spiritual sky, one quarter is the material creation. That material creation has innumerable universes. You know, one universe is so big the scientists can't measure it. And we're on one planet in one of those universes out of innumerable universes which are constituting one quarter of the creation. So on this one planet, Earth, you know, it's one of the smaller planets in this universe. He said there are seven continents. And on one of the continents, North America, there is a great city called Los Angeles. And in that Los Angeles city, there's a long boulevard called La Cienega. And on that La Cienega boulevard, there is one church building, which is now a Hare Krishna temple. And in that one Hare Krishna temple, there is one temple commander, and he thinks that he is very important. And I was, you know, I felt so small. Prabhupada said, he thinks that he is very important. There is one Tamal Krishna, and he thinks that he is very important.
Prabhupada walked in the room, and he just looked at the situation of the preparations, and he stopped. He said, what is this? Where are the fruits? Where are the flowers? I cannot believe this. He said, I think this initiation ceremony is a farce. I cannot bring the Lord of the universe into a place like this. Why have you not decorated nicely? What is this? What are these things? There were stainless steel hotel pans for bathing the deities you know, this the rectangular they call hotel pens. They were the best the devotees had to come up with, but Prabhupada was totally dissatisfied. Totally dissatisfied. He started to rage. He stood there for a long time chastising Nanda Kumara, chastising Shamsundar, chastising Akoyananda, one or the other, one after the other. Then he said, I am not going to do it. I do not think this is simply, I cannot do it. You have not done nicely. This is not, there should be flowers and fruit everywhere. Everything should be much, no, I cannot do it. I'm leaving. Then he stopped. And he kind of hesitated. Then he got up on the Vyasasana and said, all right, I will do it. But I do not think this is very nice. And this was all right on TV. He didn't pay the slightest bit of it. He was shouting for, it must have gone on, I think it might have gone on for 10 minutes. He just dressed all three of them up and down one side and up and down the other. It was just incredible. And I was shaking. I was thinking, boy, I'm lucky that I wasn't in charge of any of the arrangements. Then he said, all right. So it was a kirtan. And then he said, all right, Revati Nandan Maharaj, you do the fire sacrifice. Now, Pradyumna was there, and I had assumed that he was going to do the fire sacrifice because he always did them, right, when he was there. But I think maybe because it was Akoyananda sannyas unexpectedly, unexpectedly, I was called upon to do it. Now, I'd already been doing some of these, both marriages and deity installation ceremonies in London, but I hadn't done one in months. However, I knew all the prayers and mantras. So I thought, well, I sat down to do it, right? I just had to start functioning. And at least luckily, I thought I know very well the Mangalacharana prayer, so at least I can chant the mantras, and I knew the one about Om Apovitra Pavitra Va Sarva Vastam Gatopi Va Yaksmared Pundarikaksham Shabhaya Bhyantara Suchi. So I started in, and as I started doing the Bande Ham Shri Guru Shri Jutta, having everybody repeat it, every time I would break syllables in the words. Like, for example, where does one divide the one word that is Sri Varsavanavi Devi Daitayan Kripabdaye? It all shows as one word in the songbook. Where does that break up into syllables? You have to know Sanskrit in order to be able to properly divide it into smaller groups of their compound words. But Prabhupada had already told us in India not to spend time studying Sanskrit other than to learn it as we did classes. And so I wasn't a Sanskrit scholar. I was forbidden to do it, actually, because he wanted us to be preaching in India. So anyway, every time I would make a mistake, Prabhupada would interrupt me. And he would say, no, it is not like that. It is like this. And he would show the correct division of the words into syllables. But I had to continue to keep on going. And every time I made a mistake, which were inevitable mistakes, because I did not know Sanskrit, you know, Goravir Bhava Bhume's thumb is one word, right? Etc., right? So where to break it up in the syllables? And every time I made a mistake, I got chastised. And the more he chastised me, the more nervous and upset I got. Because all of a sudden I was on the firing line. And his mood was intense that afternoon. I've never seen him like that, personally, that angry, right? And so... Finally, in my confusion, I skipped over I got through to Namo Mahabharanaya, and I skipped it. And I started into Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu, and Prabhupada said, no, you have forgotten Namo Mahabharanaya. All right, I will finish these mantras. And then he concluded the mantra chanting, much to my relief. Right? Then the rest of it went basically okay, right? Prabhupada had a sour look on his face most of the time, but then he gave Akoyananda his sannyas. Akoyananda was standing there. Besides taking sannyas, which is serious enough, he was also had just been chastised very heavily. And he was holding the danda, and his teeth were clenched, and he was shaking. So finally, when it was all over, and one more thing, you know, afterward, the mantras are chanted a second time the way Prabhupada did an initiation. While the fire is made, the mantras are chanted again. And then the ghee and grains are put with the swaha, and the bananas are put, right? So while Prabhupada chanted the mantras, I was doing the fire because I was sitting right there at the sand, right? So, so what happened is, as I was doing it, I started feeding sticks into the fire with my right hand and had the ladle in my left hand. And I was pouring ghee. And as I held up the ladle, I realized, oops, it's supposed to be in my right hand. And I switched hands, and Prabhupada was looking at me as I did it, and he went, like this. Because, again, I'm left-handed, right? And I had I was using the wrong hand to pour the ghee on the fire, and I had to switch it, and he was watching me do it. And he made this really disgusted look on his face. So finally, when that was over, he said, all right. He pointed at me, he said, begin kirtan. I started leading a kirtan. Prabhupada looked over to Koinana, who was still standing there like this. And Prabhupada looked at him, and for the first time in that afternoon, he smiled a little bit. And he went like this to Koinana, looking at him, meaning dance. Get your body moving. You know, loosen up a little bit, right? He was pleased with his seriousness and also wanted him to get into the swing of the kirtan. It wasn't that serious, you know what I mean? Or he should enjoy Krishna consciousness also. I thought that was clear from his facial expression. It's the first time he smiled all day. Then he got, after it was over, the place totally packed, he got up and went to the back door to leave. And when he got to the back door, the car hadn't gotten there yet. And he had to stand in a little drizzle of rain for a few minutes, and the crowd was so packed in behind him that he couldn't even fit back inside. And he was just standing there like this in the rain. He got into the car, and he asked Nanda Kumara, so, you have brought my prasadam? Now, he was taking simpler prasadam by that time. And Nanda Kumara said, well, Prabhupada, I thought you would take your usual prasadam, since it's not as rich. He said, no, this is a deity installation. I want Mahaprasadam. So Nanda Kumara, he said, go and get me a plate. So Nanda Kumara went back in, came out with a plate of maha, and they drove Prabhupada off. Nanda Kumara told me, a little later on in the afternoon, when they arrived at Prabhupada's apartment, the car stopped, Prabhupada's plate of prasadam fell off the back seat and landed face down on the floor of the back seat of the car, which one can simply assume was what the floor of a back seat of a car is usually like, not perfectly clean, right? And Nanda Kumara went, oh no, you know, to himself. And when Prabhupada went upstairs, he said, I was hoping Prabhupada would forget about his prasadam. But the first thing he said was, where is my prasadam? Bring me my prasadam. And he said, Prabhupada, it fell on the floor. Prabhupada said, bring it. And Nanda Kumara picked it off the floor, put it back on the plate, and brought it to him. He said, Prabhupada ate the whole plate. Right? Again, it probably had dirt and whatnot in it, and Prabhupada ate it all anyway. Because it was prasadam.
I don't remember what it was that I did, but there was some foolish thing I did. And Prabhupada looked at me, you know. There was something about that. I had forgotten something. And so I said, Prabhupada, I just can't remember. He said, yes, you cannot remember. He said, because there is nothing inside there to be able to remember with. He said, simply zero. Just zero. I thought, this is the final thing. After all these years, there's nothing in there, you know. I said, oh, boy. Heavy chastisement.
I went through this really difficult bout of illness. Then I came back. I went to Delhi, and I got better. And we traveled some more. And I ended up back in Calcutta, like maybe 2 years later or something, with hepatitis. And I wasn't getting well. I was taking Ayurveda, and I wasn't getting well. And Prabhupada finally said to me, I remember I was explaining to him, because when he came back, he had been away, and then he came back and he said, you are not getting any better. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm taking Ayurveda. And he said, do not take Ayurveda. He said, Ayurveda is for preventative medicine. He said, you are now very sick. You should go to a regular doctor and take regular medicine. So he thought Ayurveda was preventative, not curative. And, I mean, after all, he was a pharmacist prior to becoming a sannyasi.
When we got to Rishikesh, Prabhupada was ill. And we were staying in this house, Ganga Darshan. Very nice house. Right overlooking the Ganga. Prabhupada had been lured there by Nava Yogendra Swami, who told him, if you drink water, I think it was he who lured, if you drink water there, you'll get back your health. So as soon as we got there, Prabhupada told me, bring Ganga Jal. And I immediately put on my gumption. I dove off the second story of the building because it was overlooking the Ganga. And I dove into the Ganga from the second floor. Prabhupada was getting his massage. And I went out with a loda and came back, swam back with the loda, brought up. And Prabhupada, right in the middle of the, you know, and he was not eating well at those time. This time, it was the last months. He immediately took a full, you know, glass of water. And a big belch came out afterwards. And Prabhupada said, "Ah, accept it." And he smiled. And he was very pleased with that. I was standing there dripping wet. And he accepted. So then he immediately ordered, "Go out and get kachoris. Kachoris and jalebis." There was one shop very famous for making jalebis and kachoris in Rishikesh. And Prabhupada said, "This hot jalebis is a remedy, cure for sore throat." He said, "Now it is a little cold, we must get hot jalebis." So we ate hot jalebis, and he said, "This is whenever you have sore throat, you eat hot jalebis. But it must be made fresh hot." And another time, Prabhupada gave me the cure for, it was a very nice cure, isn't it? Jalebis, if they're made, you know, nicely, are so tasty, and that's how you get better. Another cure he gave me was when you have dysentery. Hot puris and salt. The puris must be cooked in ghee. They must be right off the fire with salt. And sure enough, I had this dysentery. I took hot puris and salt, immediately cured, like a cork.
Another interesting time was when we were in Calcutta. Prabhupada showed us where he used to live, where his childhood home. And he talked a lot about his father and how his father showed him how to do a Rath Yatra and how he used to have small childhood Rath Yatra festivals. And his father, I think, was a very important influence to him. He really loved his father. He talked about him with a lot of reverence and love and respect. So that was wonderful, seeing where he grew up.
His son was there, Vrindavan Chandran, and Vrindavan Chandra and myself were with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada started to remember his grihastha life. And then he started to say, he said, "My wife was your mother." He said, "Your mother," he was telling his son. "Your mother was very good, very chaste, very devoted." He said, "One could not ask for a better wife." He said, "It was I." He said, "I was not very easy." And he started to cry. He said, "She was so good." And it was like he exhibited all of these apparently human qualities, and as a sannyasi, and he said, "I should not say this." He said, "I should not say it." But I could see it was just a way of healing any possible feeling which that his son might have had towards him for having left the family and taken sannyas. And it wasn't acting, but he was very soft. His heart was so soft. I liked moments like this where, you know, there were very extraordinary moments where it's so different than what normally Prabhupada showed in his official position. But they were so special and charming.
He said, "Ribadi, you're into philosophy. You know what Prabhupada said the other day?" I said, "What?" He said, "Prabhupada said that sometimes even after going back to Godhead, a soul could fall again." And I said, "Are you sure?" Because I knew a lot of Bhagavad Gita, and there's a couple of verses in the Gita where Krishna says, "Having returned to my transcendental abode, one never returns to this world of miseries," etc. There's several verses. I think there's three different verses that mention never returns if one completes the business, right? So he said, "Well, you can ask him yourself, but I'll guarantee you that's what he said." So when I got a chance to go into Prabhupada's room, it was after he woke up from a nap. And Nana had just put a garland on him, and there were several devotees in the room, and I asked if I could ask a question, and he said yes, and I said, "Is it true that just recently you've been talking about how sometimes even having gone back to Godhead, a soul sometimes falls again into the material energy?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, how does that relate with what the Gita says when it says never?" And Prabhupada smiled a little bit, and he said, "Actually," he said, "never means practically never." Okay? This is what he said. "Never means practically never." And he smiled a little bit, kind of a wise, you know, meditative smile. And he said, "Because really we are eternally the same. So marginal means that there is that capacity to turn away or turn toward. So sometime it might happen. Of course, generally a soul does not fall. And even if he does, he probably wouldn't do it again. But it is not inconceivable. Right? That's what he said. Again, it relates to the same issue, because some people say that souls never fall away in the first place, or they fall from somewhere else besides Krishna's association. Well, this was definitely about being back to Godhead, as it describes it in the Bhagavad Gita, back to Krishna's abode. So those are some relevant points that I thought might be interesting to record.
About book distribution, Prabhupada said, big books are more important than softbacks. He said, hardback is more important than softback. He was very firm about this point. Give out big books. He wanted more big books distributed. He always said that. And he really liked the Radha Damodar Party. He said the main thing he liked about the Radha Damodar Party, he said, you have understood a very important point, that in the Kali Yuga, people don't come to the temple. You have to bring the temple to the people. That this was the whole idea about book distribution. Go out to the people.
I had lived in India for almost 4 years, and I finally went back to America, partly because of my health and partly because of my husband. And it was a weird situation, because I had been so involved in Krishna consciousness in India, which is so different than Krishna consciousness in the United States, at least at that time. When I saw all of these people and heard these techniques like changing people up and wearing wigs and going to airports and doing all these things that I thought were very un-Krishna conscious, I was so frustrated and unhappy. I thought, let me get back to Prabhupada as quickly as I can. And so I went back to Bombay, walked into his room, and I said, Prabhupada, you wouldn't believe what they're doing in the United States. They're changing people up and they're wearing wigs and they're doing this and they're doing that. And I'm like tattling on my, you know, God brothers and God sisters. And he goes, are you perfect? And I said, no. And he said, well, then they are doing the best they can. They're trying. So don't criticize. Just stay here and cook for me. Don't worry about it.
Prabhupada said very clearly that any way that they could come into contact with these books, he said, even they just touch it. He said, even if they look at a picture, if they touch the book, he said, they begin their devotional life. Therefore, he told the book distributors, put the book in their hands. He said, if they just touch the book, never mind even read, if they touch the book, it has so much power.
I was in Prabhupada's room one time, and there was nobody else there, so I said, I wanted to ask you, Srila Prabhupada, when we're out traveling, a lot of the time we stay up late with the students. If they're going to stay late and ask questions into the night, we stay up with them, because we probably won't see them again. Sometimes they're very sincere. So we're occasionally up until 12 o'clock midnight or 2 in the morning after a program, preaching, talking with students. He said, how do you do... He was concerned about the book distribution, whether it was being done right, and I said, well, we place your books as the altarpieces, because we use the Krishna book as Radha Krishna, and your picture is on the back of it, and we have a Panchatattva painting, then we have kirtan, and I give a lecture, and we have more kirtan, we give up prasadam, we invite the students to come and look at the books and talk to us. He said, oh, he said, he smiled as he started smiling as I was talking. He said, oh, that is very nice. He said, if you just continue to do just like that, he told me, it does not matter how many books you distribute, because your program is different. It will attract devotees. So he specifically said, quote, it does not matter how many books you distribute. He said, as long as you're presenting them nicely, which we were doing. Right? So he was actually real pleased. And I said, well, I'm a little worried because sometimes we get to bed real late. We get up 6 hours later. We're not up for a Mangala Artik, or we're not up by 4 o'clock in the morning. So we're not really following the exact sadhana. And Prabhupada was still smiling. He said, that is all right. He said, because you are doing Sankirtan, he said, that will be fine. He said, then he told me something. I have written in my books that our movement runs on two tracks, which are called the Pancharatriki Bidhi and the Bhagwat Bidhi. He said, the Pancharatriki Bidhi means the rules and regulations of deity worship, and our temple sadhana is centered around it because of the Mangala Artik, etc. It sets all of our time of activities and like that. Right? And and it's very valuable for devotees to become strong, right, by being regulated. He said the Bhagavad Bidhi is simply chanting, dancing, feasting, and philosophy. And it is Lord Chaitanya's process. That is really what Lord Chaitanya came to propagate. He said after, when he instructed the Goswamis to write, they produced books which, he said they added some modes of worship from the previous age mode of worship, which was deity worship. In order to make the process appear more Vedic to the smarta Brahmin community in India who are otherwise criticizing Lord Chaitanya, that we do not find this in the Vedas. So to make it appear more Vedic, he said, they added certain things, and that is what we call the Pancharatriki Bidhi, right? So even though I say in my books that our movement runs on two tracks and they are both equally important, he said, I will tell you that that if you can get along without the Pancharatriki Bidhi in this age if necessary, but you cannot get along without the Bhagavad Bidhi. This is why your Sankirtan activity is sustaining you even without the regulation of the regular deity worship. He said, so if a devotee needs to be strengthened, then send him to the temple or return him to the temple, but otherwise the Sankirtan will be all you need. And then he told me, do not preach like this. Do not speak like this. And I said, why? Because I was all ready to run out and start singing. I thought it was wonderful what he explained to me. And he said, no, he said, many devotees are attached to the deities and the deity worship in a very sentimental way, which is helping them to be attached to Krishna consciousness. And if you explain like this, they may mistake it that you are criticizing the deity worship, right? Or the deity, that it is less important or unimportant, right? So therefore, do not preach like this. I'm explaining this to you for your own understanding of priorities, in other words, which was very nice of him.
Once he said, the rules and regulations are because you have no self-control.
One time Prabhupada would tell me, another thing he didn't like is that I would fall asleep sometimes. As soon as I get in the car, I fall asleep. So we were riding in the car, in the back seat, I was sitting next to Prabhupada. And I was just like this. So Prabhupada said, you are sleeping. So I said, no, Srila Prabhupada, I'm not sleeping. He said, you are sleeping. I said, I don't think I was sleeping. He said, I said you were sleeping, you're sleeping. He said, chant Hare Krishna. So I started to chant, and Prabhupada was chanting japa very quietly, and I was going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Hare. And then you know how you catch yourself when you stop? And I looked at Prabhupada just chanting. Another time, Upendra was sleeping in the front seat. He was going like this. So Prabhupada leaned over, and he very gently caught Upendra's sika from behind. So when Upendra went like this, the sika yanked. Upendra turned around. He thought I had done it. He was very angry, you know. But it was Prabhupada had caught his sika.
We went to one engagement, and I can't recall exactly where it was, but it was a big, huge feast that this lady had prepared for us. And there were onions all throughout the vegetables. And, it was delicious. It was vegetarian, but there was onions. So one of the devotees, I think it was one of the men, I can't remember which one, leaned over to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, there's onions in the vegetables. He whispers it. Prabhupada looked at him like he was, his eyes were on fire. He was so angry. He said, quiet. Eat. He didn't want to offend her. He was very sweet. He said, it doesn't matter. Just eat. And then another time, they were serving us chocolate. And we all thought, oh, you're not supposed to eat chocolate because it's got caffeine in it. And Prabhupada said, eat it. He was like he said, just eat it. You can have ice cream. It doesn't matter. So he was casual in some ways and strict in other ways, but I think that his principle was he didn't want to offend our hosts more than being a stickler for the rules and regulations. And that was more of a concern to him, I think, than the fact that there was onions in the vegetables. He didn't care. And he ate it and complimented her on her cooking. So it was a great example.
So Prabhupada had a very big appetite. He really relished prasadam. And he would take at least 45, 50 minutes to take prasadam. And he would eat alone. And he would chew and chew with his eyes closed. Chewing, chewing, chewing. And just really relishing prasad. When we went to India, of course, we got to eat with Prabhupada regularly. Because we would be invited. Prabhupada said, this is preaching. He said, we make members by eating. He said, very good preaching. Because in Surat, when we went to Surat in Gujarat, he made a condition that he would only take prasadam if the person would become the life member. So we got 30 days invitation, he made 30 members. He said, this is preaching. Then all the devotees would sit together. Prabhupada would be at the head on their little chonkis, and we would all sit and take prasad. So it was very nice. We got trained to take prasadam with Prabhupada.
After Jaipur, the Maharaja of Jaipur had decided to give us a property that was behind Govindaji's temple. And so Prabhupada didn't think, me being a woman, I could manage things on my own. So he left Devananda there to work with me. And another Indian brahmachari that I can't think of his name right now. But anyway, to make a long story short, they backed out on their offer, which is why we don't have a temple in Jaipur, but they were originally going to give us an actual old palace. And then they backed out on their offer after Prabhupada left. So we came back to Mayapur, and the rumor mill had been running hot and heavy that Devananda and I had had an affair. So I was very, very upset about it. And I wanted to just shave my head and live in an ashram. There was one of Prabhupada's godbrothers had an ashram just outside of Mayapur, and I said, so I went into him and I said, Prabhupada, I can't take it. I just want to shave my head and live in the forest, and I don't want to have to, you know, suffer all this criticism and all these rumors and stuff. And he said to me, why are you complaining? He said, look what I have to take. You think you have to take so much? He said, Kaushalya, you are looking for a calm sea, and you will not find it here. You will not find it here in this material world. You will only find it in Goloka Vrindavan with Krishna. And so he said, I would let you go and shave your head and live in the ashram, but I would worry about you. So you cannot go. You must stay with me. I said, fine, as long as I can stay with you. So that was that.
Prabhupada was in a room in London, Bari Place, and he was appreciating the service of Jamuna Devi. Prabhupada glorified Jamuna Devi unlimitedly for her qualities and her devotion. He once wrote her a letter that she was on the level of Bhava Bhakti. In a letter he wrote this, very high position. But one day he said, if she weren't a woman, I would make her a GBC. If she weren't a woman, I would make her a GBC.
And then another time in Jaipur, Malati at the time was cooking for him. And there's a lot of monkeys in and around the Jaipur temple, the black-faced monkeys. They're very rascally and they're very funny. So they kept coming and stealing food. And she went in and we were sitting there. I was talking to Prabhupada and Malati comes in all in a panic. The monkeys will not stop eating the food. They keep stealing your food, Srila Prabhupada. He said, I'll tell you what we do. We take a bow and arrow, we shoot one monkey, and hang it over the kitchen. And then it'll scare them all away. And everybody's like jaws dropped, you know, because he's saying this very seriously. And then he laughs. He said, I'm just kidding. It was very funny. And he was always saying funny things like that.
Someone brought ice cream from New Vrindavan to Prabhupada in Vrindavan, the final days. And Prabhupada took it right on a teaspoon and ate ice cream from New Vrindavan. They had dry ice to keep it cold. And they brought him a ring they had made. And as soon as we showed Prabhupada the ring, he said, so, where is the bride? I said, where is the bride?
So when it was over, I talked with, I think, Shamsundar Mukunda, or rather Nandakumara, were there, I said, maybe I should go over to Prabhupada's apartment just on behalf of the devotees and apologize. Because we all thought that it was the worst disaster day we'd ever seen as far as our service was concerned. So I got a ride over, and I asked Nanda Kumara, is Prabhupada still up? And he said, yes. He said, can I see him? He said, well, put your head in and see if he'll see you. And when I put my head around the door, and Prabhupada looked at me, and I said, can I come in? And he said, yes, come on. So I came in, and I sat down at his feet after offering obeisances, and I said, Srila Prabhupada, on behalf of all the devotees, I just wanted to apologize because we did it so badly, and we know it was just so... we're sorry to have displeased you so much. Prabhupada smiled at me a little bit. He said, do not pay it any mind. I'm almost positive that's what he said. Do not pay it any mind. And I was really amazed because he was as cool as a cucumber. So a question came to me. I said, and I knew from experience in India and other places never to refer to Prabhupada as an example of a pure devotee to his face. Because when I did it one time in India, he said, I am not a pure devotee, I am a rascal. With great vehemence, he said it. Right, so I said, Prabhupada, can you answer me a question about the consciousness of a pure devotee? And he said, yes. Well, he said, ask. You know, so I said, sometimes it appears that a pure devotee may be very angry or that he may be happy, right? And yet, how does that really affect him, right? Because I was thinking, now he doesn't seem upset even slightly, right? So Prabhupada answered like this, basically. He said, the consciousness of a pure devotee is very, very deep. He said, it is like the ocean. He said, the ocean, on the surface of the ocean, near the surface, there may be so many waves that are kicked up. But as you go down even a few feet into the ocean, you will find out it is very still. Right? He said, so, and I understood what he was saying immediately. So in other words, so he said, in this way, the consciousness of a pure devotee is so deep that nothing really disturbs it. He said, there may be some ripples on the surface, but underneath it remains very, very deep and still. And I said, is it like that even at death? And he said, yes.
Krishna Kirtana Gana Natana Pano Premamritam Manidhi Dhira Dhira Jana Priyau.